Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In 2009, today's guest, former priest and sex abuse survivor Robert Hotson, put out a call to Catholics around the world. Quote, "Stop donating to the criminal enterprise known as the Roman Catholic Church. Instead, we urge all donations be sent to organizations such as Road to Recovery and other survivor supporter organizations, where they will be used to assist innocent victims of abusive priests." End quote. Robert Hotson spent 40 years as an insider in the Catholic Church. He spent 14 years as a priest, and when he was 18, he says he was sexually abused by three different religious brothers. Robert Hotson has been blowing the whistle on abusive priests and other members of the church for decades. He says we need grand jury reports in all 50 states. Last Tuesday, a Pennsylvania grand jury report revealed the result of 2 years of scouring the church's records. It found that more than 300 so-called predator priests in six Roman Catholic dioceses across Pennsylvania preyed on approximately 1,000 children. The report alleges church leaders were more interested in safeguarding the church and the abusers than tending to their victims. None of this surprises Bob Hotson. He's been blowing the whistle for decades. Bob Hotson is co-founder and president of Road to Recovery, a nonprofit providing services to and advocating for victims of abuse. Hi, Bob. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for all the work you've been doing for decades.
Hello, Rose. Thank you very much for having me, and thank you for that lovely introduction.
Thank you. We're also joined in studio by Melanie Sakota. Melanie volunteers for the Survivors Network for those abused by priests. It's also called SNAP. As the organization's East Bay leader and member of the board of directors, Melanie has been involved with SNAP since 2009. She's also co-founder of, is it Pokrov?
Pokrov.
Thank you. Pokrov, a resource for survivors of abuse in the Eastern Rite churches. Melanie, thank you for your work and thank you for joining us.
Oh, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Very happy to have you. Bob, I've been doing a lot of reading about the incredible work that you are doing. You blew a whistle back in 1976 when, as an Irish Christian brother, you were teaching at Blessed Sacrament High School in New Rochelle, New York, and you noticed that the principal, Brother Robert Post, was too friendly with some of the boys and felt that those boys were at risk for sexual abuse. You fought for 3 years to have him removed from the school, and it happened, but you were transferred as well for blowing the whistle. So, I mean, you have been blowing the whistle for such a long time.
Yes, Rose. You know, I am a victim of clergy sexual abuse myself, so my antenna is usually up at all times. And when I was in New Rochelle, I sensed that the principal was a little too close to some of the boys. It was an all-boys school. And like you said, it took 3 years for me to get rid of him, but it happened. But I paid the price, too. I was transferred out. He then became a priest in the Diocese of Bridgeport, Connecticut, where he continued to abuse boys. And then about 25 or 30 years later, some of the boys that I was teaching at Blessed Sacrament High School finally came forward to say that, yes, indeed, he did abuse them while they were high school students.
Wow. So that was in 1976. Fast forward to 2003, Bob, and you testified before the New York State Legislature. You were a priest in the Newark Archdiocese at the time, and you called for the resignation of any bishop in the United States who's covered up child sex abuse. What happened 3 days later?
Well, that was May 20th, 2003, and it was my honor to speak in front of Senator Tom Duane's subcommittee. They were considering, you know, changing legislation on the statute of limitations for child sex crimes, and I called for the resignation of bishops who covered up, and 3 days later, May 23rd, I was called into the headquarters of the Archdiocese of Newark, and I was told that my language was too strong, and that I need to tone down my language. And then the vicar general with whom I was meeting slid a letter across the table at me, which indicated that I was fired from my ministry. I was directing two schools in the inner city of Newark, New Jersey, working very hard, and was fired immediately. Ironically, My replacement, another priest, was removed 4 months later for inappropriately touching one of our eighth grade boys that I had just left.
Wow. So, Bob, you've been doing this for decades, and I just wonder, there's so many stories about how calls to organizations like SNAP, for example, surge when these new reports come out. What has this been like for you? I mean, you're just living this over and over again.
Actually, Rose, in many ways, I've been on cloud nine since the Pennsylvania grand jury report and since the resignation of Cardinal McCarrick. I was ordained by Cardinal McCarrick in 1997. And everyone knew about Cardinal McCarrick and his abuse of seminarians, for example. I've been doing this a real long time.
So do you feel like this report is a turning point? You just said you were on cloud nine. What is it about this specific report?
Well, about the report, I was proud to be in the media conference center on August 14th when Attorney General Shapiro made the announcement. I was with many, many dedicated staff members of his office. They worked tirelessly, and finally someone was there to articulately tell us what the truth was about the results of their study, and it was not only sad, but inspiring to find that secular people would do this kind of work to help children heal and recover.
Hmm.
So in that sense, I'm on cloud nine. But we now need the same kind of study in 49 other states.
Yes, and we'll talk about that in a minute. We will also talk about McCarrick in just a couple of minutes. But Melanie, I want to bring you in because you volunteer with the Survivors Network for those abused by priests. You've been involved with that group, SNAP, since 2009. Do you think it's different this time?
It somehow feels different, but then since I wasn't involved with SNAP in 2002 when the Boston Globe report came out, perhaps I'm just missing something, but I think the people that I work with were hopeful. This seems to be a big story. It seems to have legs, but then again, maybe in a few weeks it will die down. I'm trying not to be too optimistic because I don't want to be disappointed.
How did you get involved in SNAP?
I was going to a Russian Orthodox church in San Francisco, and there was a abuse incident at our church that a lot of us felt was very poorly handled by our bishop. And we realized that the person that was accused of the abuse wasn't a priest, and he wasn't anything particular. And we thought, if it's this hard for us to talk to our bishop about what should be done, what's it like for a survivor who's been injured and is coming forward against a priest or other clergyman? And so we, in 99, three of us started a website for survivors of abuse in the Eastern Orthodox churches. And in 2008, the founder of SNAP, Barbara Blaine, reached out to different groups across the country that were working in the same field and said, hey, let's work together. And so I started working with SNAP in 2009.
Since 2009, what changes have you seen?
I think it's, in some ways, it's been on the back burner. It's become harder and harder to get media interested in stories. Even survivors seem to be very... we've done all we can. The church has changed its policies, and I never believed that there had been any real change. When Cardinal Law was removed from the Archdiocese of Boston, he got a cushy job at the Vatican. He wasn't really punished, or disciplined. I don't say punished, but disciplined. And I think that's been the same the case for all the other bishops that have been involved in cover-ups. They're allowed to resign. They're not removed. And so we always knew that there were all these hidden predators that...
And as you said, Cardinal Law was whisked away to Rome. And Bob, isn't it true that so many people in the church who've been involved in cover-ups have been sent to other countries, Central and South America. Before the show, Melanie and I were talking about men who've been sent to India.
Oh, yes. There have been many, many foreign-born priests who have come to America, abused, and then either are sent home or there are priests already here who are then sent to foreign countries. Yes, there's it's like a pipeline. You know, and remember, the church is completely international. There's a diocese in every corner of the world, literally.
Wow.
And so they have a place to go and hide.
For those of us who aren't familiar with the inner workings of the church, Bob, can you tell us about the hierarchy and how these decisions are made?
It's hard to describe. It's such a medieval kind of structure. It almost goes back to the divine right of kings. Cardinals are called princes of the church, and the Pope, you know, obviously is like a monarch who really controls everything. It's really ruled by one man and to whomever he gives power. And so the Catholic Church has been run by a group of men for centuries, of course, and they make the rules, and it's their way or the highway. And that kind of abuse of power, you know, power concentrated in very few people, that has led to this abuse of power structure, and also the sexual abuse of children, financial abuse, spiritual abuse, etc. It's a structure that has to be dismantled if any change is going to occur.
Melanie, what would you add about the hierarchy and how these decisions are made?
You know, the board of directors of SNAP got an interesting email from a woman in Australia recently saying that the bishops, in her view, and I believe her specialty was canon law, the bishops are required to cover up these incidents. And she said, until you change that law and make it that, no, they're required to report to the civil authorities, there will be no true reform. Hmm. I don't know if that's true. That is not my area of expertise, but it seems to fit with what I've been seeing all these years.
Bob, what do you think?
It absolutely is a culture of secrecy. Melanie is spot on. Cardinals actually take a pledge to the Pope that if they receive any information that is in any way scandalous to the Church, they are to keep it secret. There are secret files in every diocese in the world with a key held by the bishop. Now, in 2002, a very brave judge, Constance Sweeney, allowed the secret files in Boston to be open. And as a result of that, that's what led to the unraveling of the Boston Archdiocesan sexual abuse scandal. And that's what we need across the world. The files must be opened, they must be examined, and then action taken.
Bob Hodson is co-founder and president of the organization Road to Recovery. They provide services to and advocate for victims of abuse. Bob is also a former Catholic priest and a survivor of clergy abuse. He spent 40 years inside the Catholic Church, 14 years as a priest. In 2009, he sent out a message to Catholics around the world saying, "Stop donating to the criminal enterprise known as the Roman Catholic Church. Instead, give your donations to groups that actually help survivors, like Road to Recovery and like SNAP." Melanie Sakota volunteers with SNAP, Survivors Network for Those Abused by Priests, as the organization's leader in the East Bay in Northern California and a member of the board of directors. And today we are talking about this damning report coming out of the Pennsylvania grand jury. It revealed the result of 2 years of scouring the church's records. More than 300 predator priests in 6 Roman Catholic dioceses across Pennsylvania preyed on 1,000 children. The report says church leaders were more interested in safeguarding the church and the abusers than tending to their victims. And today's guest, Bob Hodson, says we need this kind of report in all 50 states. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What do you make of this latest report? If you're a member of the Catholic Church, is this something that the church talks about? The New York Times had a piece over the weekend that said some priests in Pennsylvania talked about this in church this weekend. Other priests completely ignored it. So what are your thoughts about how this latest scandal should be addressed. And if you have, if you're a member of the church and if you're a survivor and you'd like to share your story, you can be anonymous. We'd love to hear from you. If you work with survivors, you can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We'll talk about specifics of the church because it really did get detailed. It's horrendous what this report reveals. But before we do that, Bob, you said that the Catholic Church, this whole enterprise really needs to be dismantled. What does that mean exactly? What does that look like?
Well, we need a democratization of the church. I don't know if lay people understand this, but they really only have two powers in the church. And I call it the powers of the feet and the powers of the wallet. They have a chance to walk away. They can use their feet to walk away. Or the only other way they can issue or express their dismay or disdain or whatever is to stop contributing to the church. See, for centuries, Catholics have been told three things: you pay, you pray, and you obey. Hmm. Well, those days are over. Okay, and laity have to now take back their church by telling the hierarchy we're not going to abide by this crazy medieval archaic structure anymore. We're going to demand equal footing, you know, as baptized people in the church.
So you're saying that it's really up to people who go to church to take a stand and say, we're not going to give money anymore and we demand change.
Absolutely. Those are the two powers the laity have right now.
And have you seen that happen over the years? I understand that after the explosive Boston Globe reporting came out, the contributions to the church went down, but then they went up again.
Yes, and the same thing is occurring right now. Evidently, the donations are decreasing, and there is even a movement that I read about on the Internet of people who are telling, save your pennies. Don't put a penny into the collection basket until somebody gives an action plan to end this clergy sexual abuse scandal.
So much of it comes down to money?
Yes.
Melanie?
I think so.
It is money.
Melanie?
And actually, we've gotten a few calls like that too, from Catholics who are, and particularly in Pennsylvania, who are saying, "No, I'm not giving any more of my money to the church. I'm now donating my pledge to SNAP," and we're grateful for the contributions.
Bob, how much money are we talking about here? I mean, when you go to some of these mega churches in the South, I mean, we're talking 3,000 people are giving money almost three times every Sunday because they have three services on Sunday. Sometimes just one of these churches can bring in hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Well, I think the big mega churches you're talking about are not of the Catholic
right. Those are different. So how much? But we're talking about a lot of money. How much are we talking about with the Catholic churches?
Oh, we're talking billions and billions of dollars. Remember, in America alone, the churches is approaching a $4 billion payout to victims. So money's no object. When California opened the window a couple of years ago and hundreds of victims came forward, they paid out hundreds of millions of dollars to those victims, and it was like a blip on the screen. They didn't close any schools. They didn't close any churches. They didn't have to, really curtail any of the ministries that they have, like Catholic Charities, and they just went on as usual. So we're talking about incalculable numbers of money.
Well, let's take a few calls. Let's go to Bill in Mountain View. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Just a quick comment or suggestion for how to hold the church accountable in this situation. Sort of get around the tendency to bury it. I'm very disturbed by some of the comments about secrecy. So here's my suggestion. Before going to the church, if you're an abuse victim, go to law enforcement first, and then go to the press second, and then only third after those two things have guaranteed accountability to go to the church, because then they have no choice but to address and not bury your situation. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Melanie, do you want to address that one first?
I think that's exactly right. That's what we always tell survivors when they come to us is, we ask them if they've reported. Now, we're a little charitable then because not all survivors are ready to go to the police. Not all of them are ready to go public. But we do encourage that, and the more survivors that come forward, the more we can get a handle on what this problem actually really looks like.
So what changes do, or what differences do you see when a survivor goes to law enforcement rather than the church?
Well, number one, the law enforcement knows what they're looking for. I mean, in to investigate a sexual abuse case, you are less likely to have a law enforcement say, well, are you sure? Could you have misinterpreted that? You know, what were you wearing? Now, that does sometimes happen, but you're far less likely to find that. You're not going to find them saying, well, now let's go to confession and we're not going to talk about that anymore. You know, it'll be okay. We will take care of it. And then you ask what's happened and they say, well, we can't tell you that.
So what happens when a survivor goes to law enforcement? At what point is the church contacted?
That I don't know. I would assume they probably investigate. They make sure that the person was actually at the place and time that it happened, that the alleged perpetrator was at the same place. And then they probably go and ask the church for their records.
Bob? What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I agree with the caller, Bill, of very well done. Yes, law enforcement first, but I advise survivors never, ever to go to the church unless they have an attorney, okay? Number one, you never, ever go alone to the church, and number two, if you go to the church, it's because you've gone through other processes first, and your lawyer now will inform the church. So remember, these are crimes we're talking about, so law enforcement should get the first call because they're the ones that investigate crimes. Now, because of silly statutes of limitations in many, many states, those survivors are barred from any kind of perhaps criminal or civil cases. But that means then that they could ask a lawyer to contact the diocese and then start to negotiate with the diocese. And sometimes the diocese will then say, okay, we're going to help this person recover. Hmm. But that's the last, in a sense, that's the last line of defense.
What are other barriers to coming forward, Bob? What else can you tell us about statutes of limitations? Because one of the victims who came forward in this Pennsylvania report was 83.
Yes. Yeah. This is what I have said to many legislatures throughout the country. I would say to them, how come there is no statute of limitations on the destruction or the murder of the body? If a person is killed 30 years later, that the killer of that person can be held accountable. Why do we have a statute of limitations on murder of the soul, which is what mental health professionals call child sexual abuse? Why can't a child who is now 83 go to a court of law and hold his or her abuser accountable? And the legislators tend to agree with me, but then, of course, we have the lobbyists for the church and the insurance companies, which then block that legislation.
Lobbyists for the church and the insurance companies.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that? Actually, we're going to take a quick break, and then I'd love for you to elaborate on what power the church and these lobbyists for insurance companies have on state legislators, and then what power do they have at the federal level. Today, we are talking about what it will take to ensure justice for survivors and accountability. What will it take to just ensure that perpetrators are held accountable for what they have done to so many children, and what it will take to prevent abuse in the future. Bob Hotson is co-founder and president of Road to Recovery. He's a former Catholic priest and a survivor of clergy abuse, and Melanie Sakota volunteers for SNAP, Survivors Network for Those Abused by Priests. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, as survivors of sexual abuse speak out through the Me Too movement, several states and organizations are working to create better sex education. Groups like Health Connected are developing tools to help young people understand sexual development and turn the talk into an ongoing conversation. So we'll talk about how consent being taught in schools is helping to fight sexual assault. And then later in the week, we will be joined by journalist Beth Macy. We'll talk about her new book, Dope Sick: Dealers, Doctors, and the Drug Company That Addicted America. Today we are talking about the damning grand jury report about sex abuse in six Pennsylvania Roman Catholic dioceses. Survivors of those abused by priests held a rally in downtown Pittsburgh yesterday saying, "We don't want prayer, we want justice." So what will it take to ensure justice for survivors, hold perpetrators accountable, and prevent future abuse? Today we're joined by Melanie Sakota. She volunteers for SNAP, Survivors Network for Those Abused by Priests. She's their East Bay leader. She's been involved since 2009. Bob Hodson is co-founder and president of Road to Recovery, a nonprofit providing services to and advocating for victims of abuse. Bob is a former Catholic priest and a survivor of clergy abuse. Before the break, Bob, you were talking about the power of church lobbyists and also insurance lobbyists. First off, can you talk about the power of the church and what it does to lobby politicians?
Well, one of the results of the grand jury report in Pennsylvania indicated that even law enforcement deferred to the church in many cases during those examples of sexual abuse by clergy. The church has had enormous control over all aspects of society for years. The police, law enforcement, public entities, the government, et cetera, legislators. So that there's still a remnant of that still in the interactions of the church with the state, and those have to end. But for example, in New York, I've been going for 15 years lobbying to pass the Child Victims Act there, and we haven't yet been successful. And the major block to that has been the lobbying efforts of the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church has spent millions of dollars to lobbyists to block that legislation, because they know that if the legislation were enacted, the floodgates would open. And that's what we're attempting to tell legislators. We need survivors to be able to have their day in court. It doesn't give the survivor anything except the day in court. They still must prove their case, regardless of when it occurred.
And Bob, in terms of lobbying, can you be more specific? What kind of politicians are closely connected to the church lobbyists?
Well, for example, in New York, we have the Child Victims Act has passed in the Assembly. I believe it's seven or eight times in the past few years. It has just glided through the Assembly. When it gets to the Senate, we don't even get a vote on the floor, and it's because essentially of Catholic legislators who are in charge of the Senate. So, for example, Senator John Flanagan is an Irish Catholic man from Long Island. He has blocked that legislation from getting to the floor. His number two in the Senate is John DeFrancisco from Syracuse, New York. He has blocked it. I have met with him personally, and he continues to say, all this is an effort to hurt my church. The same thing has happened in Pennsylvania and New Jersey as well.
Melanie, what would you add about the power of the church lobby and how it affects legislation?
Well, I would add, and maybe this is because I didn't come out of a Catholic community, but the Catholic Church blocking SOL reform affects not just Catholic victims. It affects Orthodox Christian victims, Methodist victims, evangelical victims, anyone who has been abused, even in the family, from coming forward and having their day in court. So it's not just a Catholic issue. Everyone should be concerned about this. And, you know, just as they should be concerned that the predators that the Catholic Church, and I'm not saying that they're the only ones that have hidden predators, but that the Catholic Church has hidden, could be in your community. You know, they could be living next door to you, and you wouldn't know it because they're not on any sex offender registry.
Well, Tony has a point that's related to what you just said. Let's hear from Tony in San Francisco. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi. Yes, I was a victim in third grade. I'm now 60. Suppressed it because that's what you did back then. It was a Methodist minister in my neighborhood. I walked home from school. All of my friends were also victims. I've never said anything to my friends. And even though I know this friend that I'm still friendly with was a victim, and he was taken out of that church and moved to other churches. he's dead now, I know the minister's name, and then you're just 60 years old, you never trust religion your whole life, and you just, let alone trusting people. I watched it happen in another church to a friend as a teenager, and it's like, it's not just the Catholic Church, that's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
It's not the Catholic Church. And you, what do you do at 60 years old? There's nothing you can do other than live with it. Mm. I don't believe there is anything you can do.
Tony, can I ask you, I mean, how are you affected when new explosive reports come out and something like this dominates
awful.
The media?
It brings it up. Right. It brings me into that office with that man that I trusted so much, and him lifting up my beautiful dress and going down my underpants. Mm. And I was an extremely shy little girl, and it mortified me. And then also, I went home and I said something to my mother. I wasn't very verbal. And she just said, don't go back there. So every day I would walk past the church and lost all my friends as a result of it.
Wow.
So it's more tragic than you can imagine than it's for the people that live with it. And I've done fine in life, you know, as far as work and everything and educated, but it's there. It always will be there, even at 60 years old, from third grade to 60 years old.
Wow. Have you sought out help, Tony? Have you talked to anyone about this over the years?
Well, I've had therapy and stuff. And, you know, and truth be told, it doesn't, you know, I see about these kids that are actually raped. I was not raped, but so I always think the worst. I've worked with children that through my whole life that were far more disadvantaged than me. That's always helped with seeing things clearly. But it's just the fact, the lack of empowerment, that really bothers me.
Mm.
I feel it so much in these days in this country, and I guess that just brought it up, you know, and even listening to that man talking about lobbying for the rights of the victims and how the church has so much power.
Right.
And we don't as individuals, and even if I were to get all those people back together, I know half of them probably wouldn't want to say anything. And then the man's dead, the priest is dead, I mean the minister's dead, and the church, I don't think, you know, I don't think we're ever going to get, and it's also our word against, you know, a child's word against a man that's dead.
Right.
So what do you do? There's nothing to do.
Wow.
I'm glad it's out now. I'm really glad it's out now in the open.
Well, Tony, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your experience. Melanie, Tony is 60 years old today talking about what she experienced as a young girl.
Exactly.
And I'm sure you've heard this story from so many
people. So many people. And it's, you know, whether they're abused in the Catholic Church, at home, in the Methodist Church, in the Orthodox Church, the stories are pretty much the same. The cover-ups are pretty much the same. But it's right. The Catholic Church is the largest organization in the world. They have a tremendous amount of power and a tremendous amount of money. And they are affecting what survivors everywhere can do.
And every single survivor has a specific story and deals with it, I'm sure, in many different ways. What kind of resources are available for people at this point?
I think for a lot of people, therapy can be helpful. And there are resources in the Bay Area, even for people who don't have the money to pay for a therapist. I think sometimes SNAP runs, and I think Bob also runs peer-to-peer support groups. And sometimes that's very helpful. You know, I've had people, like I've sent Orthodox people to SNAP groups, and they've said, oh, my God, you know, I went there, and there was a man who was raised Catholic, but he was telling my story. You know, that you recognize the commonality. And a lot of survivors say they feel alone, that they're, it's like they're the only person that this has happened to. And that's simply not true. As a matter of fact, if you look at it, child sexual abuse is a pandemic. 1 in 5 children are abused before they are 18. That's a, if it was a disease, we would be throwing money at it. There's no money for research. There's no money for research into how to help the survivors. There's no money in research into how to treat the predators.
No money?
Like, well, no, there's a little bit of money.
But no government money?
Very little bit. I mean, there's a woman in Virginia who runs a group called Stop the Silence, and she says that, you know, if you look at how many children are affected by childhood cancer and how much money childhood cancer gets and how many children are affected by childhood sex abuse and how much money is thrown at that, it's appalling. You know, people have to start considering that this is a public health problem.
Bob, can you also add to that? There's not much money coming from the government to help people who are survivors?
Well, it's one of the great tragedies of American history. You know, children were often viewed as property, even through our documents throughout history. Children were seen, you know, similar to like cattle. So that's in many ways how people are treated when they're sexually abused. They're kind of like our property. So now what is happening is a light is being shown on all of this, and we're hopefully asking legislators to increase, you know, the amount of money that goes to recovery for these victims. But just remember this: every time a child is sexually abused, that person can be a massive burden on the income, on the finances of a state or even a federal government because of the various illnesses and addictions and failed relationships and possibly incarcerations. Sexual abuse puts people off the rails, and very often to get back on the rails, they have to go through an enormous amount of difficulties, you know, including you know, hospitalizations and all kinds of things. I'm in my 41st year of therapy this year.
Wow.
And I know I will be in it for the rest of my life. And thank goodness I have been able to stay in there. So I even say to Tony, thank you for your courage in talking about your abuse. And don't give up because, you know, there are services and that you can fight back. You know, you can fight back.
Mm. 41 years. Bob, if a family's listening right now, I mean, are priests, are members of the church abusing children today?
I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, that's the sad part of it, Rose. We will not know the names of the children who are being abused now for another 20 or 30 years because they go into silence for decades now, and then we won't hear about them until they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, etc.
I mean, this has got to be so difficult for families who are members of the church because there are hundreds of thousands of them out there. If a family's listening right now, Bob, and they suspect that something might be happening to their child, what should they do?
Engage with their child immediately. Just ask the child, did anyone ever harm them in any way? Tell them that you will walk them through every step of the way toward recovery if something happened. And it wasn't their fault. Just keep emphasizing that. They were innocent children. And then begin to then probably call a child psychologist if they're still children, of course, or some sort of mental health professional. And that's the key to it. When someone says to me, "What's the key to recovery?" I say therapy, therapy, and more therapy, and then medicine if necessary, because goodness knows I was on, you know, antidepressants and anti-anxiety medicine for a good 10, 15 years until I could talk through most of the trauma that I experienced. But tell families now not to give up. You know, there is hope and there are resources where your children can recover.
There's also, and I was reminded about this at the leaders meeting in the SNAP conference this past July, is for in each state there is what's called a victim witness fund. And there are some monies that are available to help survivors recover through each state. And you just have to look into it. It's not always easy. You know, it's just kind of like applying for a Social Security disability. You'll probably be turned down the first time. But if you persist, you will probably be able to have some support from the state for what happened to you.
Are any politicians fighting to fund organizations that help survivors?
Not that I know of.
Bob, do you know of any?
Not politicians? No, not that I'm aware of politicians. I know there are some very courageous politicians who are helping us pass legislation, but not so much, no, funding organizations, no.
And how, that is greatly needed right now, right?
Yes.
I mean, do you both rely on donations and...
Yes.
Absolutely.
Bob Hodson is co-founder and president of Road to Recovery, a nonprofit that provides services for survivors of abuse. Bob is a survivor of clergy abuse. He's a former Catholic priest. He spent 40 years as an insider in the Catholic Church and 14 years as a priest. He says that Catholics need to stop donating to the Catholic Church. Instead, donations need to be sent to organizations that actually help survivors. We're also joined by Melanie Sakota. She has volunteered with SNAP since 2009, the Survivors Network for those abused by priests. And if you'd like to join us, there's so many layers to this. The latest report just came out. You know, Bob says that we need a report in all 50 states, that this institution really needs to be dismantled. What would you like to add? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. You can tweet us at Your Call Radio. We have an email from Stephen in San Francisco. He writes, "The Pope is to be commended for his strong rhetorical stance against a culture of sexual abuse in the church. However, given the number of similar cases here in the U.S., Ireland, and around the world, it's clear that these are not cases of a few rogue clerics or occasional lax oversight by bishops. Of course, any abuser and person involved with covering it up should be disciplined. But prosecuting an offender will not be enough to stop this culture of complicity and denial. It's time to address the root causes of this crisis, namely enforced celibacy and a lack of gender equality in the priesthood. Perhaps if priests could have sex without sin and women had equal authority within the church, these sorts of horrific abuses would truly become things of the past." Bob, I've been hearing this over the last week, that celibacy is one of the main issues, and inequality and patriarchy within the church. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that very informed layman should be congratulated. What a magnificent articulate statement on one of the, perhaps the, one of the most significant issues. Mandatory celibacy must end immediately. Now, I didn't say celibacy should be ended. Celibacy is a gift. And some people are able to live celibacy. However, to force young men and women who join religious life or the priesthood to force them to be celibate is to put them into an unnatural state. They are not called to celibacy. They are called by God to be priests or religious women or men. The church then adds on the burden in many ways of mandatory celibacy. Well, that's an unnatural state for human beings. And when unnatural states are placed on people, then unnatural things happen, like sexual abuse of children. So, yes, mandatory celibacy is definitely a cause of this. And if we listen to laymen like that gentleman who just made that statement, we would resolve all of this.
Really? You think that it would be resolved just on that issue?
Well, no. There are several others.
But that's one of the top issues.
Absolutely. No question about it.
What do you think, Melanie?
Well, I think if you eliminated mandatory celibacy and you opened the priesthood to the women, you would have a larger selection of candidates, which may mean that you could eliminate some of the candidates that it's obvious from seminary that they're unhealthy. I don't think it would totally eliminate the problem. I come out of a faith where married priests are the rule, usually. The hierarchy is celibate. But they could be widowers, and there is still a problem. I think the most abusers you find are actually heterosexual, supposedly heterosexual males. Mm. So you're not, and when you have a priest that is married, he, in fact, can't have more access to children. You know, he may have children of his own. Oh, come and spend the night at Father's house, with little Mary, And you have priest children that are abused, which you don't find in the Catholic Church. So
have there been any studies looking at whether abusive priests and members of the church have also been abused?
Not to my knowledge. Bob might know.
Bob?
No, I don't know of any studies of that nature, no.
I just wonder what percentage of the people who are doing the abuse have been abused as children.
Well, it tends not to be a large number. Sexual abuse victims do not in great numbers become sexual abusers, but some do, yes.
Well, look, we have time for another caller. Let's go to KDF in Oakland. Hi, KDF. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Rose, and thank you for this program. The Me Too movement put a crack in the ice of patriarchy, and so long as women and children are considered lesser beings, rape reigns supreme. The most important thing about power over is that you can do with someone else what you want. And the patriarchy has not served us well. It has brought us war, famine, inequality, and, as I said, power over. And so although some people laugh or scoff at religion and don't understand the depth to which, as he said, a soul can be murdered, this is so important. It's the beginning of the end of the patriarchy. We saw what happened to Hypatia in Alexandria, Egypt, in 349 A.D. By the Copts, and we're finally starting to reverse the trend, and bless you all.
Thank you for calling in, KDF. What about that, Bob? You talked about celibacy, but what about equality and female priests, for example?
Yes, Katie was spot on, and thank you for that comment, Katie. Yes, patriarchy is part of that mechanism that I mentioned earlier about this divine right of kings. You know, it goes to the heart of it, and where there is no accountability, you see, the patriarchy in the church has established a system whereby no one questions those who are in authority, and so there is no accountability. And when there is no accountability, then all of these kinds of crimes and things can flourish. But I agree 100% with what Katie was saying. This could be the beginning of the end of the patriarchy, where we become more and more in tune with valuing everybody's life and everybody's opinion and everybody's participation.
For those of us who are not involved in the Catholic Church, Bob, what is the relationship between men and women? I mean, priests and nuns, for example. What is that power dynamic like today?
Oh, men hold all the power and women don't, essentially. And we have to open up all structures in the church to women. Mm-hmm. If women had been part of the clergy throughout all of this, this would have ended a long time ago, because women wouldn't have stood for this, and the men wouldn't have gotten away with it.
What do you think, Melanie?
Well, I would like to think that, and I do think it would make a difference. I think there's perhaps a little bit something different about becoming a mother that makes you feel protective toward all children. But I don't want to leave out the fact that, you know, we're talking about the Pennsylvania report, which only talked about abusive priests. Nuns also have engaged in both extreme physical abuse and sexual abuse of children. And, you know, women are not perfect, and we should keep that in mind as we're dismantling the patriarchy, that you don't want it to become a matriarchy with the same problems.
Very good point. I mean, there are, can you talk just quickly more about that? Because a lot of people are saying what Bob is saying. We just need women in power in the church, and this problem will go away.
Well, as I said, I think if you open the priesthood to more people, you have a better chance of selecting healthy people who are really there because they want to serve. But you can't ignore the fact that abuse is not just done by men. I mean, you know, we probably don't know the real statistics, and it looks like men abuse more. Mm. But there are women abusers, and we should always be cognizant of that fact as well.
It's a great point.
Yeah, and Bob, I think the problem with nun abuse has to do with their participation in the patriarchy. Hmm. I think in many ways nuns have become almost absorbed into that method of thinking, and I think that has created many problems relative to abuse. Mm.
Where does this go from here? Bob, you say that we need these kinds of reports in all 50 states, and bishops have launched investigations into sexual abuse in Boston, Nebraska, obviously Philadelphia. But where does this go from here, Bob? Where should it go?
Right across the country, right across the world. You know, in Australia, they had the Royal Commission that ended not too long ago, and it was a seminal study of sexual abuse, not just by the church, but, of course, what emerged was an incredible amount of sexual abuse in the Catholic Church. And that report, now in 2016, a number of us organizations, 30 of us organizations, we petitioned President Obama to open up a national commission on sexual abuse of children. We weren't successful, but I'm hoping that perhaps federal leaders as well as state and local leaders will get on board and do what needs to be done to uncover this and then to resolve it.
And just quickly, why weren't you successful under Obama? Who blocked it?
We don't know. We mailed all of our information and delivered our information to the administration, but never heard anything positive back.
Wow. I'd love to know why and what happened there. Quickly, yeah. Melanie, where does this go from here?
Again, SNAP and the Center for Constitutional Rights in New York has just again written to the Department of Justice, asking them again to open it up. And people everywhere can start writing to their state attorney general and saying, we need this in our state, and how do we make it happen?
Yeah, they're starting to do that right here in California. Melanie Sakota is a volunteer with SNAP, the Survivors Network for Those Abused by Priests. She's been there since 2009. She's their East Bay leader and member of the board of directors. Melanie, thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having us. Me.
Of course. Bob Hodson is co-founder and president of Road to Recovery, a nonprofit providing services to and advocating for victims of abuse. Bob spent 40 years as an insider in the Catholic Church. He spent 14 years as a priest. He is also a survivor of clergy abuse. Bob, thank you so much for all of the work that you do, and thank you for joining us.
Rose, thank you so much. It was a wonderful event.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.